Okay, look, thanks very much to the organisers. It's really a great pleasure to be here today to speak with reps from across the Kimberley at this annual forum here in Broome. It's my first time here, I'll admit, so I hope I'm adding to tourism numbers in the right kind of way. I'm going to cover some of the main developments in the Australian economy over the last few years, and really focus in on those that have been more pronounced here in Western Australia, and then draw out how some of them might have played out in the Kimberley. I'm hoping this provides some useful context for the discussions later today, but a couple of themes that have already come up around population and labour flows is something that I've got one or two slides on, so I hope that'll be useful. Given my role, I'm going to draw on insights from the Reserve Bank's regional and industry liaison program. And as Darren mentioned, it's the team that I lead from Sydney. But also, this information really helps us in the bank assess developments in the Australian economy. So, just briefly, a little bit about that program. We have a team in Sydney who conducts some of the liaisons, plus also in the other four capitals, including Perth. And the staff that we have, they meet regularly with business and community associations throughout the year. So last year we did about 750 of these meetings. The majority of them are in capital cities, but we also try to, apart from the five that we're located in, we also regularly get to the other state and territory capitals, as well as regional centres like here in Broome, to get insights from outside of the capitals as well. And we certainly took the opportunity of coming to Broome to this forum to have some meetings yesterday, and thanks again to those businesses who shared their time and their useful insights in terms of those. It's been a little while since one of the bank teams travelled to Kimberley for liaisons like this, but I'm hoping, going by the mix of people here today, that we'll certainly have a multi-day program of meetings when we're next here. So the liaison that we do, it does cover all parts of the economy. It helps the bank understand really about what's influencing decision makers, and all the official data. We have a lot of people who analyse in great detail the official economic data. Well, that gives a good sense as to what might have happened. That's often quite lagged, and but also it doesn't actually give you much indication of why something has happened. So the liaison insights are really really beneficial and helpful in getting the why something is happening in the economy. The information that we get is timely, and that's really useful when you're asked by the governor or whatever what some of the unexpected events, how they might be impacting the economy. So, whether it's drought, cyclones or other natural disasters kind of thing, sometimes, you just got to get on the phone and being able to have that contact base to draw from is helpful in those sort of situations. And certainly, over the past decade, it's been extremely valuable in monitoring the effects of the mining boom on the economy here in WA, Queensland, but also the spillovers of that to the rest of the economy, and it's been giving us some great insights there. We include the liaison insights in our regular reporting that goes up to the RBA board each month, and we also include some of the learnings in our quarterly statement on monetary policy, which sets out our reading. Quarterly reading on where the economy is heading. And we also have a quarterly bulletin that is published on our websites that has some more in-depth articles about different aspects of the Australian and global economies, and often the liaison insights will be used in those articles that are in there. So there's quite a few sources of information there to where it goes. But really our liaison insights are kind of integrated into the analysis that we do rather than a standalone separate product. So that's it on the program. I'll just start with the technology, and This is just Australian GDP growth over the past 20 years or so. So in terms of recent macro developments, the past year the Australian economy has expanded by a bit over 3%, as shown here. Inflation's been around 2%, a little below, a little above, depending on which quarter you're measuring it. The unemployment rate has edged lower over the past 18 months or so. It's currently 5.3%, which is a 6-year low. And our expectation is really that GDP growth will remain a bit above its 3% there, basically for the next year or so. And as that happens, that'll sort of further reduce spare capacity in the economy. So that should then coincide with further tightening in terms of the labour market, a little bit more wage growth and a little bit more inflation. But I guess the outlook is very much one of a gradual change from here. Things have been improving, but they've been improving gradually, and we will continue to expect that kind of gradual pace going forward. So if you asked, you know, how has the Australian economy done over the last few years, I think we'd probably say, look, it's done pretty well given some of the forces that have been at work. And there have been a few factors that have really supported these sort of outcomes. I mean, to start with, monetary policy in Australia is extremely accommodative. Cash rate's been unchanged at 1.5% for over 2 years now. And as well, like, the global economy has been expanding really quite strongly. Rick mentioned, you know, many of the advanced economies are growing at really, you know, their best rates of growth in over a decade, and unemployment rates in a number of them are at multi-decade lows. And even though the trade tensions, you know, through this year have been increasing through the year, China's growth has really, you know, held up reasonably well, although it has slowed a little. And what these favourable global conditions have done is have really meant that commodity prices for our exports have been higher than we expected. We're continuing to expect some easing back in commodity prices over the year ahead. And really, this has been in our forecasts some time, and we've really expected growth in China's demand for steel to slow. That hasn't been as pronounced as we might have expected, so we've been sort of surprised with higher prices than lower, which is when the economy is national income is derived from a lot of those commodity price movements. That's a good thing. But really, we still are expecting that China's demand for steel will slow, and the additional supply coming online will put some downward pressure on those prices. You end up with sort of some of the more negative outlooks in terms of some of the trade issues that we've just been talking about. That would certainly put some downside to those commodity forecasts. But the final sort of third positive factor that I want to highlight, and I want to spend a bit of time on, is really about what's been happening at the state and territory level, because this really explains sort of some of the improvements in national outcomes over the last year or so. So in brief, basically the variation in outcomes that we have seen over the past decade has really lessened considerably over the past year or so. And so in line with the improvement in conditions in the mining exposed states. So basically, you know, we've had a decade or so where large movements in commodity prices and related mining investment cycle has really explained a lot of the variation in outcomes across the states and territories. So in this chart here, so WA is shown in the ready orange line there. This is state final demand, which includes the domestic activity, but it doesn't include the trade side, so it doesn't include exports and imports in there. as you can see, there's peak in demand in WA in 2012 as the investment boom was at the highest levels, and then that has come off since and gone negative for a number of years there as that mining boom came to an end. While the other states were also affected, WA experienced the largest effect. The unemployment rate increased to be above the national average and wages growth slowed fairly markedly. More recently though, the economic performance of the states has started to converge, and I'm going to look at this convergence from the three perspectives of business investment, labour markets and housing markets. So starting with business investment. So yeah, the overall improvement in conditions across the states is partly explained by the investment cycles. So in Queensland and WA, they both experienced similar large falls in business investment as the mining boom ended. Queensland, this decline eased a bit sooner, and they've actually experienced reasonable growth for the last couple of years. Here in WA, there's been a welcoming levelling out in business investment over the past year or so, but we're still expecting some further decline as the final LNG projects get completed. Over the past year, the contacts in our liaison program have reported a pickup in activity across the mining and resources sector. They typically cite the combination of the higher commodity prices as well as the need to invest to maintain their new higher levels of production, so a sustaining capital expenditure concept is the reasons for this, for the pickup in activity. And in WA, the sustaining capital spending has so far been mostly by the iron ore industry. We had three large replacement mines being announced to be built in the next couple of years. But we're also hearing about plans for a couple of large offshore gas projects as well, sort of in terms of more early 2020s starting. And some of that's also around this needing to do that to maintain these new higher production levels. We're also seeing that the high prices for commodities such as sort of gold and some of the lighter weight metals and battery-related minerals are supporting increased spending on exploration. So this is just total exploration spend in WA. And these higher prices are also supporting some more small expansion projects. One of the things we hear in liaison is that the improved outlook for global uptake of electric vehicles and renewable energy is behind some of the interest in the lighter weight metals and battery mineral investment projects. But these sort of developments all certainly augur well for future investment, both here and nationally. Here in the Kimberley, you'd certainly be well aware of the effects of the LNG investment cycle, given your experience with the Prelude and Nicholas projects off the coast. The construction of these projects has supported the region's economy, including the marine and air transport and accommodation services. And while, as they move into production phase, they'll certainly require less of these services, we're certainly hearing about that the ongoing spending will still be required to sustain them over their lives. And there's also signs in the Kimberley of some of this sort of pickup in mineral sector activity more generally. So examples like the restart of the very high-grade Koolan Island iron ore mine are examples of firms seeking to take advantage of the increased demand in China for higher quality ore, and that's really about them trying to improve productivity and reduce pollution. So this sort of move to the very high-end spectrum of the iron ore grade is something that is affecting prices, but it's also affecting the feasibility of new projects coming in. And also we heard yesterday about some examples of sort of rare earths pilot processing plant as well, which the Browns Range one is certainly one of those examples of a firm seeking to take advantage of this increased global uptake of renewable energy and battery-related products. I'm going to swing now to population growth, and this came up briefly in the previous session, because certainly developments in the labour market and population growth have been important for WA and important for this region as well. The migration flow has been an important adjustment mechanism for the WA economy in how it has dealt with the large swings in activity this decade. We saw strong overseas and interstate migration during the investment boom that enabled the construction of new projects in WA. And so, as a result, annual population growth in WA hit almost 3.5% there in around 2012. This is a very large number in terms of population growth. Countries like Japan that are at zero, or Germany that are slightly negative. So getting a 3.5% there is a very strong number. As investment declined, though, of course, migration to the eastern states increased and migration from overseas slowed. And so while population growth appears to have bottomed, it still remains much lower than most other states. The population growth that you're seeing in WA there is mostly natural increase. So, rather than the labour flow in and out that has driven the cycle earlier this decade. The Kimberley and the two lines there in the bottom panel of the chart has also experienced very large swings in its population growth over the decade. So very strong growth up to 2013 before population declined for several years. But still, by 2017, the population of the Kimberley was still 5% above 2007, so it wasn't a net loss over the decade, but there were some very big swings in there during it. And those numbers for the Kimberley are also, they're a bit lagged, the ABS data on this, so it's over a year old. So some of the stories I was certainly hearing yesterday, some more positive outlook suggests that number could well have turned over the last 12 months. Looking at the labour market, just shows the WA unemployment rate compared to the rest of Australia aggregated. So the flow of people from WA, as well as the reliance on interstate FIFO workers, no doubt assisted in limiting some of the increase in the unemployment rates since the end of the boom. As you can see here, after increasing quite sharply between 2013 and 2015, the unemployment rate in WA has sort of hovered around a little bit above, a little bit below 6% since then. And another channel of adjustment from the end of the boom was through the wages story as well. And this is quite an interesting one, both here WA and nationally. And this adjustment in wages was experienced by mining firms as well as firms outside the mining sector. Our liaison contacts reported, during that time, frequently reported that cost-cutting initiatives by the mining industry placed significant pressure on margins of suppliers and contractors. And these firms responded by reducing their costs, including labour. But fortunately, the stories of job losses, wage freezes, and new employees being employed at sort of significantly lower wage levels is than their predecessors, which were very common 2 to 3 years ago, are now much less common. We haven't heard those stories much at all over the last 12 months, which is a positive sign. Even so, wages growth in WA is still quite weak, 1.5% over the year to June 2018. And we're really, looking to see a reduction in spare capacity, so a reduction in the unemployment rate is going to be needed before we can generate any pickup in wages growth, both here in WA and then nationally. So what has been happening on employment? Well, Since about the start of 2017, we saw a change in the employment outcomes. So employment in WA has increased since then, after several years of pretty negligible growth. And this chart just splits the different industry composition of that growth, or of the moves in employment since 2012. And so you can see the very strong growth in household services, which is shown by the orange bars in the chart. And healthcare and social assistance is one area that's been particularly strong. It's been strong here in West Australia as well as nationally. But in the last few quarters, there's also been a small increase in mining and manufacturing employment. So that's the grey and the red bars. So they're still below their 2012 levels of employment, but you know, there are some signs of future growth there. Job vacancies numbers in particular have really shot up in both of those sectors for the state as a whole, which should augur well for future growth, further growth from these two sectors. In talking with our liaison contacts, they suggest that for most firms, labour availability in WA remains ample. There's some signs that labour availability has been tightening for certain skills, and these are from mining and related sectors. So examples we've been hearing about include some of the maintenance trades and workers involved in design and engineering of new projects. But so far, reports of tight labour availability have been pretty reasonably contained. And this is an area that we're certainly keeping on watch on in Western Australia, but also nationally, because we really need to see a steady decline in sort of spare capacity in the economy. So keeping a nudge down at that unemployment rate, that's one of the main factors that sort of sits behind our forecast for a gradual pickup in wages growth and inflation nationally. So the last one I wanted to cover was housing. It's the Reserve Bank's favourite topic, apparently. I've got to cover it in my speeches. But it's a relevant one here too, because the WA cycle has been a very different cycle to other parts of the country. There's been a marked difference in housing cycles over the past decade. The earlier strong growth in WA's population obviously contributed to rising housing prices, and new people come to town, they've got to live somewhere. This was followed by, a reasonably big increase in housing construction. But with the sharp slowdown in population growth combined with increase in housing supply, that took a while to come to be completed, that saw prices to decline. And as a result, housing construction across much of the state has been quite subdued for a number of years. This is another example of where our liaison's been quite helpful to understand the different experiences. You can imagine the sort of conversations, I do a lot of meetings in Sydney with residential property developers. You can sort of imagine that if you're sitting there on that New South Wales higher density green line on the right-hand panel there, that it feels a little bit of a different conversation to the sort of ones that my colleague Aaron has had with WA and residential construction firms over the last few years. But those conversations that we've been having in WA, sort of the most the common thing is that it does look like it is stabilising at a low level. And most are really in agreement that without a strong pickup in population growth, any increase from here is unlikely to be modest. This one gives an angle on what's been happening in the Kimberley's housing cycle during this period. So in the Kimberley, construction's also been very subdued for a number of years. Conditions in established housing and rental markets deteriorated alongside the decline in population. And again, while conditions appear to have stabilised recently, a strong pickup in population growth is really going to be needed before any improvement is seen. and the prospects for such a pickup are obviously closely linked to the labour market outlook. So I'll sum up by just reiterating that the experience of the last few years in the Kimberley and statewide has really been one of a marked slowing in economic activity with consequential effects on employment, wages, population and housing markets. There are reasonable indicators that conditions in WA are stabilising. Sentiment and activity is improving, particularly in parts of the mining and related sectors. Whereas the housing sector, it remains very subdued. Conditions there will likely to take some time to work through, and the path will be closely related to the movement of people and the creation of new jobs to encourage such moves. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Marilyn. We're going to ask anyone if they would want to put forward any questions to us tonight, because we do have morning tea coming up, but if there's anything at all that you would... Honey pie, sausage rolls? Or a good question. We'll dine in on all of those. Thanks. Just your name and also who you're representing this morning there before we put the questions forward. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Chrissy. I'm from the Department of Local Government, Sport and Cultural Industries. So a lot of stuff around economics is a little bit of a mystery to me because I'm really a sport person. But one of our big issues up here is housing, and especially in our remote communities. So obviously this issue between the feds and the state in getting agreement for remote area housing and also, you know, the construction industry and getting the job done, what sort of a role do you guys actually play in informing or influencing that?
Yeah, thanks for that. So in terms of the Reserve Bank, I guess we've got two ways to influence housing at the broader level, but then sort of thinking about that in terms of the specific that you raise of remote housing. So, at the broad level, the interest rate affects whether people, a lower interest rate should encourage more housing being built in the private market, and a higher interest rate should discourage more housing being built. So I think the example that you've got there is one that's sort of not necessarily a market that is responsive to interest rates or not. So our main policy tool there isn't one that's quite so relevant. But I suppose what we actually see as our role around the housing issue nationally is to be a very a good source of research and information and facts as to what people do actually face out there, and whether it's the affordability, recognising that affordability isn't just about being able to buy a house, it's actually being able to access a house through many different forms, through the different forms of either being a renter or some sort of socially provided housing or the private market. So we've tried to put a lot of information in the sort of public sphere so that policymakers who do have some direct tools to be able to make decisions on actually can have some good information out there on which to base it on. And certainly in the any of the sort of the social remote housing space, I guess the message we get from our liaison with community associations is that's a space that is very much, there's excess demand in, there's very large waiting lists for, and that therefore the thinking about what is the affordability constraints on people who, if they don't have that social housing angle, what is the private market doing for those people is really quite important. So I guess our main role is to try and make sure that there's as much good factual analysis out there around the and recognising that there's those different parts of the housing market. It's not just about people buying their first house. It's not the only conversation that's happening.
Thanks.